Hello,
hello,
hello
everyone.
However you identify, you are welcome on our journey of broadcasting excellence,
where we chat a lot of bollocks for a couple of lads that don't have any.
Too true. Although it does take balls to tell a lot of the stories on here to the public.
It sure does, mate. Each week we discuss a topic tenuously linked to being trans, from coming out to dildos and dildon'ts to special guests.
I am Satch.
And I'm Leo, and this is our transmission.
Our series sponsors are The Agora, where life begins.
The Agora is a fertility treatment centre that helps all kinds of parents-to-be. It has the highest success rates in London and the South East.
They are partnering with brands like ours to develop their specialism of trans fertility treatment.
With over 2,000 babies born through this fabulous fertility facility.
Fabulous fertility facility.
It has an excellent team and exceptional care for both you and your baby-to-be.
So, without further ado, let's find out what we are on about this week. Welcome back to Satch and Leo's transmission. In this episode, we are going to be discussing dildos and dildon'ts with Dr. L off of Candid.
A real life doctor.
Real life. She is an actual doctor. I don't know how we managed to get these people to talk to us, but L has kindly offered. So, L, we are going to give a little bit of an intro on you. So you have to fact check us and tell us if we're wrong.
Yeah, I previously got a few facts wrong in another one. So let's see how much of this is correct.
We fired the entire research team.
All 50 of them.
Put yourselves.
We fired ourselves. Don't ramble ourselves. This is a big operation we've got going on here.
Sorry.
Okay, so.
Okay, great.
Go for it, mate.
Right, to introduce Elle. So Elle Voot is the resident sexual wellness doctor at Candid, which is a sex toy company designed with LGBT people in mind. She's all about body positivity and feeling yourself. Literally, Dr. Elle prescribes masturbation as it is apparently a range of health benefits it has. And she's an NHS junior doctor, so she knows her shit and is an absolute fucking hero.
Lovely.
And today we're going to be asking her a few questions. As she's an experienced sex educator and sexual wellness promoter, to find out how we can better improve our sex lives. What do you reckon to that,
Elle? Is that okay, Elle?
Oh, that's like the nicest intro I've ever had, guys.
Yeah. Rehire nice that research team.
Yeah.
Bring him back.
just before we start, though, Elle, tell us about the new job that you're doing, because that was really cool.
Oh, so I am moving cities at the end of next month to work as a clinical fellow in expedition medicine, which means most of the time I'll be based in an A&E department doing sort of general emergency medicine work. But for about 3.5 months of next year, hopefully, if it all goes to plan, I'll be flying out to Costa Rica and working with a youth development charity called Raleigh International. And working as their field medic. So when we go out and do conservation work, community work, but there's also quite a lot of trekking and adventure stuff involved as well. I get to be the doctor and all that, so it's really exciting.
That's incredible.
Mate, you are making us look so bad.
Yeah, I'm like, I worked in a coffee shop and now I'm here. That's incredible.
That is so cool.
Coffee day, so thank you for your service.
No worries.
He's a frontline worker. But you're still working for Candid as well. And Candid have kindly sponsored this episode. And I should say now that they are doing a discount for Satch and Leo's transmission listeners. So, you know, we really are the gift that keeps on giving. What's the code? Type in S and L 10 at the checkout for an extra percentage off. How good's that?
Extra 10%. I'm going to be buying a lot of dildos. It's going to be great.
With that coffee shop wage, right?
Yeah. Maybe just the one dildo.
Great decoration, guys. I'm telling you now.
Ooh, that's a shout. I don't know how I'd feel if I went back to somebody's house and they had like just dicks on the walls.
Don't come around mine.
Don't come back mine
then. Oh, we did the same joke. We're so in sync. Right, we've just chatted shit for like 5 minutes. We haven't even asked a question yet. So,
right then, let's get on
with
it.
Leo, you go first.
Okay, so tell us about Candid and how and why did you hook up with them?
Ooh.
So, Candid is a really innovative, inclusive sex toy company, but it's more than that. It's a sexual well-being brand. And actually, it's a really funny story how I met them. I had just finished a work shift with and went and met a couple of my best girlfriends. And we'd heard that there was a sex positive Christmas market happening in Shoreditch. And we were like,
amazing. Of course there is. Yeah. Great. Yeah.
And in the bar over the road, it was happy hour from 5 to 7:30. And then the market started at 7:30. And we were like, that's great. We'll just do that. We'll go for happy hour. Bearing in mind, you know, we've been at work all day. Nobody had eaten properly. Went to happy hour. They, where it was 2-for-1 cocktails and cheap bottles of Prosecco. Then they messed up one of the rounds of cocktails, so we got an extra bottle of Prosecco for free. So amazing. By the time we got into the bar over the road for the sex positive Christmas market, everything was a little bit of a blur.
You were a bit over refreshed.
Yeah. Very well hydrated. And I just remember seeing the stall that was really, really busy, and like everybody kept going to it. And I was like, oh, there's loads of people there. That's too many people. Like, I'll go see it later. And then eventually it cleared up and I went over with Hannah and Jess. And it was just obviously a table of dildos.
Of course.
I was like, yay, this is great. And I remember picking up one, which I can show you. I picked up this one. The big one.
The big one. And that is a big one.
And yeah, they modelled that on me.
Did they? And if you guys have ever seen the old Ann Summers trick, you know, where you put your vibrator on the tip of your nose so you can feel what the sensation's going to be like. I remember doing that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's like the thing that the Ann Summers retail reps used to all say, like in the early noughties. Wow. And I remember being like, this bloke turned around and said to me, he went, well, are you looking for something that's more rumbly or more vibrate-y? And I was like, who's that? Who actually knows what they're talking about? And it turned out to be Greg.
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 That sounds like something Greg would say.
Yeah. And Greg and Josh, the co-founders, were behind the stall. And I was talking about the big one. And they were like, and I was like, all right. I was like, well, I've been looking for a magic one for ages, but they kind of scare me a little bit. And the boys were like, well, it's £69. And we haven't sold, this would be our first one. This is our first ever event. We've not sold one yet. And I was like, sold. And then had the longest chat with them.
Amazing.
And by the end of it, Josh had given me their business card and was like, give us a ring in a couple of days. You know, we'd love to have you on board. And I was like,
oh, you got a job out of it. You got a job, yeah. And a dildo.
A job and a vibrator.
What a great
and
day.
Oh, yeah, sorry, vibrator.
Morning, I like got out of bed to go to work. And I like opened my handbag and I was like, latex nipple tassels. Perfect earrings. What the fuck? Oh, and had this massive vibrator in my bag. And I was like, and it all came flooding back. And it took me about 3 days to be brave enough to phone up Josh. Hi, my name's Ellie, that super professional junior doctor that you met the other day.
Amazing.
Oh my God, glad you did though. That's
yeah,
so good.
Exactly. Story. You know, 7 months amazing. On the line, here we are. Been working for them ever since. And it was just all those things. I loved how high quality the products were. I loved that they were an affordable price. And I just loved how inclusive it was. It's for everybody. And the focus on wellness and bringing sex into the conversation, pleasure, having, you know, open communication. It just sort of represented everything that I loved and thought we were missing in terms of our sex education, our sexual health promotion.
It's very cool. I've just realized though, so when you met Greg, there was Prosecco. When I met Greg, there was Prosecco at an award ceremony. And when we met you, there was Prosecco at the Candid launch party. So I'm feeling a bit of a theme here. For sure.
Yeah.
Alcoholism.
Alcoholism is the theme, yeah. We'll do another episode with Greg and addiction, maybe. Addiction to Prosecco.
I've got a patient at the moment who tried to order Prosecco from the nurse's station. I work in an older adult psychiatry ward a couple of days a week, and she was going up to the nurse's station trying to order Prosecco. And then through a massive strop, like slamming doors and screaming because she missed sex so much. I was that's me. That's me.
Dr. L's casual side hustle is like, yeah, just a couple of days a week. I work in this psychiatry ward, like doing all this cool stuff.
Side hustle. Like,
Okay. Oh, well, you may just have answered this next question, but what's your favourite product that Candid sell?
Actually, my favourite product, which I've also got to show you, is called the ribbed one. We've got Gregory to thank for this. For months, he kept going on at me that I should try the ribbed one. And I was like, yeah, whatever you say. Like, didn't listen to him, obviously. And then in the end, he had one that had got, the box had got a bit squashed and smashed, you know, being delivered from the supplier. And he was like, go on, Elle, you have that one. And I was like,
fill your boots, Elle.
You got offcuts.
And it's genuinely been my favourite toy ever since.
Brilliant.
It looks cool.
So, the ribbed one is a normal vibrator, like a simple vibrator, but it can be used for internal or external stimulation, or really to stimulate anything. As you can see, it's got quite like an ergonomic design, so it's got like a nice bend to it, and it's also got the ribs on it as well, and it's very flexible.
Ooh, right. That's interesting.
Also, like the little unicorn on it.
Yeah, so that's great.
The candid logo. Like a,
yeah, when and it glows. It glows. It glows, everyone.
Can you imagine like that?
It changes colour.
Wow. Oh my God.
Can you imagine like bonfire night or something? Everyone's out with torches and that's your torch.
like I'm
some,
use me on discount
some elderly relatives, yeah. Like, oh, that's a nice torch. Okay.
It's like shining unicorn.
Yeah. Right, Leo,
that's
question
incredible.
Three.
Question three. So as previously mentioned, you're a doctor with the NHS, and thank you again for being an absolute hero.
Hero.
For one. And so what made you want to be a doctor?
A very intelligent, manipulative Jewish mother is probably a big part of it.
Oh. That's not what I expected.
She's actually a big fan of the show, so she's going to hear you say that.
Big laugh, it's okay. So my mum's a nurse, and she was actually like 3 days of nurse training when she found out she was pregnant with me. So I kind of like grew up in the NHS in a lot of ways. Like a lot of my first memories, I remember being about 2 or 3, and my mum was a newly qualified A&E nurse, and just having taken off my trousers and just running around in a pair of pants around the local A&E department.
Oh, Leo's
like
done that a few times.
Yeah. That was last week.
Yeah.
No, maybe not last week.
It was some of my earliest memories. And
wow.
I remember being about 13 and saying to my mum, like, oh, I want to be a forensic scientist. Like, I've been watching loads of CSI and reading loads of, you know, true crime.
CSI Portsmouth.
CSI Portsmouth. Brilliant.
I just wanted to be the goth girl when I was 13. She's from, what was that, NCIS? You know, the one that had like the big black.
Oh, yeah, girls. Yeah.
Or Bones, that was another one. You know, she was.
Oh, Bones, yeah, I remember that one. Yeah.
They were really amazing women, and I was like, that's what I'm going to do. Awesome. And then she was like, you know, the best way to do that is by being a doctor. And I was like, oh. And then it was all of a sudden as if like loads of the puzzle pieces like fell into place. And I was like,
wow, it's destiny, mate.
Yeah. Like I still remember this conversation. And then it's like, as I got a bit older, I was about 16 and was getting ready to apply for med school. Like, cause you obviously have to start first year of A-level sorting everything out. And they were like, you need to think about a speciality. And I kind of realized by that point, I probably like people too much. Like if I was a forensics doctor, I'd be talking to the corpses, you know. And then I might
end
up in the psych unit rather than
That's like the new Sixth Sense. I talk to people.
I talk to corpses.
Seventh Sense.
You're just so then we were told that we had to think about what speciality we wanted to do. And by sort of 16, I had loads of friends who'd had all sorts of different things happen with their sexual health. And I was like, I'm not easily embarrassed. And I don't think we talk about sex enough. So I want to do sexual health. And I remember the teachers being like, oh, you can't put in your application.
Did you just say the word sexual?
Well, with that reaction, I'm definitely going to do it.
Yeah,
amazing.
But like for me, medicine's my vocation. It feels like, it's going to sound so sad, it feels like breathing. Like, I love it. I'd never do anything else.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think it's
a greater honor than making somebody feel better.
Oh, yeah. Elle, stop it. You are warming our right cockles. Okay, question four.
Number four.
Do you agree that trans people are better in bed than cis people? That's not leading at all. Don't you agree that?
Yeah. That research team leading questions.
That's great. The research team. I think sexuality and sensuality is different for everyone, and everyone finds the thing that suits them in their own way. I think trans people obviously have different sexual experiences to potentially cisgender people, especially as they're forced to be more open-minded and take sex as a bigger picture. I think they're probably better than cisgender people than being not purely genitally focused.
Yeah.
But bigger
so that's
picture.
A hard yes.
Yeah, that's definitely a yes. That's definitely a yes.
All right, Leo, go for question five.
Question five. So what would be your three top bedroom tips for a happy, healthy sex life?
Number one, communication. Like, please communicate. Like, it seems really scary at first to open your mouth because, you know, sex education in this country and, being brought up British, you have a stiff upper lip and you don't talk about these things. So making that first step can seem really frightening. But once you start opening up communication, things become much easier. Because at the end of the day, you've been doing something for a long, long time that the other person absolutely hates.
Was never into.
Yeah, and you get stuck in things like the poop loop, if you guys have ever heard of it, which is
tell us more.
Poop loop. Unfortunately, it's got nothing to do with anal, really, which is a bit upsetting.
Right.
But
I'm such a naughty. I feel like a naughty schoolboy in this conversation. She just keeps saying words, and I just giggle like a twat.
You're like poop. Oh my god, anal.
The doctor said anal.
Yeah, tell us what the poop loop is.
Yeah.
So the poop loop is, you're getting intimate with your partner and they do something and you're just like, oh, I didn't really like that. But you let it happen because it feels too awkward to have that conversation with them. Okay. So then you let it happen. And then because you haven't said anything to your partner, they think, oh, they probably like that. So then it happens again and again and again. And the more they do it, the more put off that person you become. Whoa. You're more like
subconsciously,
yeah,
even consciously, exactly. I guess, but you just don't tell them.
Yeah so it just, and that's when you then result in the whole thing like, oh, I've got a headache, or oh, I don't really feel like it tonight. And it just,
I remember that very
this...
well.
Yeah, sorry babe, like, I said that to you last night, didn't I? Oh, the poop loop.
Who knew?
So actually, like, my top three tips in the bedroom would be communicate, or maybe communicate and lube. Lots of lube.
Communicate, lube. I feel like we can make t-shirts and sell them with that on it. It's actually a transition.
Definitely.
Communicate, but lube.
I think that it's like communicate in like the right way as well. I remember when I was very young having sex with, like, I had a one night stand with this girl, and I was so, like, I hated my body because I was still very feminine at the time. I hadn't come out yet. So I was like with a lesbian and I was identifying as a lesbian. And I remember saying to the girl, I froze, and she was just like, she was trying to be sexy and she went, "What do you like?" And I just went, "Pizza." She was like going at it, going, "Yeah, what kind of pizza?" And I was like, "Just margarita, really."
That's amazing. That's making it into the sitcom, I tell you that.
Yeah. Communicate.
Yeah, it's about the context of the communication as well, as you say.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's better to have that conversation in like a non-sexual space. Like, you can be intimate without being sexual. So, you know, like curled up in bed, having a cuddle, being like, "Oh, actually, like, I really enjoy this," or "I don't like that."
Some people may find it easier as well, maybe to have that conversation via text or on the phone.
Yeah, because it's less invasive.
Mm. Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Great. Carry a pigeon, maybe. Cool. Next question.
Six.
Do you believe in the concept of good in bed/bad in bed?
I actually don't think I do. I think because why is the reason that somebody is seen as bad in bed? It's actually probably like an incompatible match in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Because I think everybody can have, even if you think you're an absolute fucking sex kitten, like you're still going to have bad sex sometimes. And that's probably because you're with somebody who you don't have the right sexual chemistry with. One of you or both of you aren't in the right frame of mind. You know, if you're in the mood to just lie back and think of England type thing, it's never going to be great sex, is it?
Yeah.
hormone fluctuations, like all those kinds of things are going to start influencing like how you feel and whether you have good sex or bad sex. So I don't think anybody should be tarred one way or another, but maybe certain pairings at certain times will be.
Great answer.
Yeah. Whoa, there's so many great factors answer that I didn't even think of. That's incredible. Brilliant answer. Okay, that one's okay. Covered then. So yes, I'm really good in bed. Great.
Cool. Thanks for the validation now. Cheers. See you later. Yeah. Bye.
Cool. Question seven. So what would be your advice for a person who is getting involved romantically with a trans person but has not had sex with them yet?
Ooh,
interesting. I think it just goes back to that other thing. It's communication. Yeah. And I think especially with somebody who's trans, especially if you've not had sex with somebody who's trans before, I think it's important to ask your partner, like, what do they enjoy and how do they like to talk about it as well.
Yeah.
It can be that real sort of medical surgical fixation on genitalia and what we call it and how far, you know, I think it's really important to find out what your partner's comfortable with and what they enjoy doing before you sort of go there, to stop any awkwardness or fear when you reach that point.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Great answer definitely. Again. You're killing it, Al. You're smashing these answers tonight.
Yeah, honestly, I feel so enlightened.
This is not your first rodeo today, is it?
Well trained by the boys, clearly.
Okay,
next question.
What do you think of a certain TERF saying shit about menstruation and that only women experience it?
Do you know who we're talking about?
Yes. And okay. It is like, I was having a rant about this today at work because it makes me so angry.
Yeah,
like,
we're not too fond of it either.
No.
It just completely invalidates the experiences of so many people. And it was so ignorant because she's talking about same-sex attraction, but actually biological sex and gender are two separate things. Like, they're obviously intimately interlinked in a lot of ways, but they're not the same thing, and she has conflated them, and I think that's the issue. So, you know, for anybody who's listening who doesn't understand the difference, like, biological sex is the physical characteristics that you're born with based upon your genetics, and it also influences certain aspects of your physiology. Whereas gender is a completely societal construct and is the way that society expects you to behave, normally based upon those physical attributes, but, you know, how you contribute to society, the way that you behave, what you do, those kinds of things. And it is the socially accepted norm associated with your physical attributes. So they're two separate things. And then sexuality is another thing separate to that, that is normally influenced by what gender you're attracted to, but, you know, sexuality as well as gender are both on spectrums. And, you know, I think it's really good with things like pansexuality coming more to the forefront, when actually sexual attraction can be completely independent of gender. And I think hopefully the more we sort of learn to accept things are on a spectrum and not black and white, the more accepting we'll become of that, and actually like start deconstructing that a little bit.
We just need to stick you in a room with that certain TERF and just you can just tell her. Just tell her.
You can
all
be
that
up at Hogsmeade. Have a chat over a butterbeer.
Yeah, butterbeer or two, yeah.
Yeah, but then we might absolutely bottle her, and I'd lose my registration. It's just not worth it.
Yeah. Yeah.
No more Costa Rica for you.
No.
Okay. Next question, Leo.
Okay, so does a good one-night stand exist? Because I don't think it does.
I think it does. I've had, like, on a personal level, I've had some great one-night stands. And again, it was just right chemistry, right timing.
Yeah.
And like, being able to pick up. Again, I would say it's much more difficult to have that conversation with a one-night stand because you don't really know that person. Being able to, if somebody's quite emotionally intelligent, they can normally pick up on body language and things. So so if you can read your partner's body language, I still think that you should talk about it out loud, because every sexual experience should be a good one.
Maybe
but
maybe people don't think it exists because either they have a bad one or they have a good one, and then because it was good, they turn it into more than a one night stand. So maybe that's why.
Oh, does it count as a one night stand if you see them for ages afterwards?
No. Does it?
But I think
it still does, because don't you think, like, yeah, a lot of things would start out as a one night stand where you think, oh, I've just met this guy.
That's like when you have a one night stand that just doesn't go home, that should have gone home.
Yeah, and it's 3 years later. But I mean, I lost my virginity on a one night stand, and that was great. Mm. But it's and she became my girlfriend for like 2 years after that, and we're still friends, which is cool. But the reason why I asked was because, I mean, for me, I feel like I'm just making you my therapist now. But sorry.
This happens a lot, to be honest. Yeah, we should have warned you.
But I think for some people, especially trans people that are single and, you know, want to be in that realm of, you know, dating and just sleeping with people because, you know, that's what they want to do. I just feel like it could be difficult for some people because they're not okay with their bodies, although they so desperately want to be that person that's like, yeah, I can casually sleep with people.
Yeah, like there's this whole game going on that people invite you to be a part of, but you don't have the right equipment to be a part of it.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Sad moment.
Yeah.
But I don't think that was really a question there. That was just more outpouring of thoughts.
Of emotions, yeah.
In so many ways, you guys are way more qualified to talk about this than I am, you know.
Although, but you're so eloquent with it. We're like, we're trans.
Dr. Eloquent. Wee.
Hey, nailed it. You can have that for free, Elle.
Okay.
Next question.
What can you do to increase sex drive before testosterone? How can you calm it down after testosterone? What's a healthy amount of orgasms a week?
It's a 3-in-1, that one.
See, we're supposed to stick to 10 questions, so we just pack 3 into 1.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So ways to improve sex drive. So prior to having testosterone.
Mm-hmm. Because you don't need to increase it after. Like, we're good to go.
Yeah, definitely. Oh my God, when I first started testosterone, bloody hell.
Right, calm down.
You guys find that you had lower libidos then before you started the testosterone?
I would say so.
Yeah, I would say so. But I think a lot of that comes down to, you know, body dysphoria and body issues and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and
then your body starts to align, then it feels, you feel more sexy.
It's like, yeah, but plus the just natural things that testosterone do to you. It's like a full-time job after that. Oh God, I hope my mum doesn't listen to this episode.
Yeah, me too.
how can you increase sex drive?
So I think as a trans person, there's always this expectation that to be sexy and central, like, it's associated with a naked body. But actually, if it's your gender dysphoria that you feel like is impacting upon your libido and your sex drive, actually clothes can be really sexy too. If your binder is what makes you feel like you, wear your binder. Don't want to take your underwear off, you don't have to. That doesn't invalidate the sexual experience that you're having. You know, sex is not a penis in a vagina. It is the whole spectrum of what you experience, what you feel. it can start from the moment that you touch somebody else's hand. You know, there's a whole body to explore. We shouldn't get fixated on certain areas. So it's about creating the context that's right for you. And making sure you're with the right person, like, you know, somebody that understands you, maybe setting up boundaries beforehand. And there's also like lots of different aspects to sort of foreplay, you know, trying certain sex toys, pornography, music. There's all sorts of different things you can try to just try and create that environment for you that makes you feel sexy. Sense?
That's amazing. I'm gonna take some of those on board, definitely. Especially music, and keeping my clothes on.
So the next part was, how can you calm it down after testosterone?
Yeah. And I suppose that links into your next question about how many orgasms are too many orgasms.
Yes. Yeah, go for it. Tie it all in.
So how many orgasms are too many orgasms? The point that you become distressed by them is a point that it's too many. Like, it's fine to have a high sex drive. Like, that's you. You do you, hun. But like, if you feel it is distressing you, that it is overwhelming, if it is impacting your ability to function within your normal societal role, then maybe it's time to go and seek some help, whether that's your medical doctor or a therapist or something like that, because something's not right and it's damaging and upsetting you. Now, ways to try and reduce that sort of feeling sexualized. Cold showers are a really good one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, cold showers actually work really, really well.
I think I'll die of pneumonia if that's my only option.
go stand outside. And maybe removing things that act as prompts for you. You know, like if you want to like calm it down. I mean, it's difficult if it feels like it's coming at you from all angles.
Right. Literally coming at you.
I know. Do you know what? I thought it, but I didn't say it. I thought I'm going to be more mature, and you just went there.
Oh, and then I just took it there. Sorry.
too far. It's okay. I think, just creating like, maybe create boundaried spaces for yourself. And try and recognize what's making my libido go up. For some people, actually, it's really influenced by stress. When people get really stressed, they get really horny. You know, other people's libido drops. But if it's stress, try and calm yourself down. You know, try and work out what is it that's causing the stress in my life and try and minimize that. Or sort of set yourself time that it's like, mindfulness can work quite well if you feel like, oh my God. Having an app like Headspace and trying to do like a mindfulness activity to distract yourself and empty your head of anything else actually is probably quite a good way around it. Just creating like safe spaces that it's like, okay, like this is an appropriate time to have sex or be thinking about sex. Actually, our age group, you know, people in their 20s and 30s are the most likely to have what we call intrusive thoughts. And these intrusive thoughts can be about sex. We can have them up to like 100 times a day. So,
they
are probably quite normal, just accelerated by all that testosterone. So, as long as you feel happy and healthy, there's nothing to worry about.
Great. Next question.
Do you think Leo will ever get laid?
Not with that laugh.
Of course I think Leo is going to get laid.
And that's from a doctor, Leo, that's fact.
I'm glad. I feel like I was losing hope for a bit there. Honestly, with this corona thing, because I've got really bad asthma.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the reason. No, that's the reason. The corona.
Yeah, that's the only reason I was having so much sex before. Yeah. But do you know what?
Reinforced monogamy, it's just terrible. Yeah.
But you just think, oh my God, what if that last time that I had sex was the last time? Because with having asthma, I was like, what if I die of coronavirus and that sex that I had last was just, you know, not great? you want to end on a high, don't you? You know what I mean?
No, I completely get that. So, yeah, I actually do have that recurring thought sometimes. That it's like, and then I think, like, what would it be like to die as a virgin?
That'd be really shit.
Oh, mate. Well, I'm glad glad we got the important stuff.
I can write a prescription
covered.
If you want, Leo. Like, one times, many times sex.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah, what would your prescription be for Leo's sex life, or lack thereof?
I actually don't think London's a particularly good place for sex, to be fair.
Joking. Don't say that, right? Sticking in Brighton now. Why do you think that London's not a good place for it?
I feel like London's really...
Because we're not there. Yeah, but it's going to get better now we're going.
Just raise the roof. I think it's really dehumanised, the dating scene here in London. I really hope that COVID has changed that, to be honest. Like, so I've been single on and off in London for the last 2.5 years. And just like, if you go into a club, nobody will talk. You know, it's like, oh, you stay in your own little, like, distinct groups now and nobody interacts. And it's so bizarre. But like, I feel like if you go out anywhere else in the country, it's not like that at all. You can just strike up a conversation.
No. Yeah, Brighton's not like that. Brighton's so easy to talk to people. But that's interesting. I didn't know that it was, you know, people in groups. I think one of the main reasons of going out is like you come back with a whole group of friends, like a whole new group. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Mate, you're gonna have to change the game in London. That's what you're gonna, don't hate the player, hate the game changer.
That was a mind puzzle.
All right, next question.
Okay, yeah. So, what do you think about this? So, is porn healthy and ethical,
or ethical, if you will? Ethical.
I think it depends on the kind of porn that you subscribe to, really.
Right.
I think there is ethical porn out there. I think there is pleasure-centric, authentic, non-corrupt porn where people have chosen to do it. I think, you know, my background, my first job when I finished medical school was I went to New Zealand and worked as an occupational health doctor for the New Zealand Prostitutes Collective, which is a bit like their sex workers union over there. And sort of porn stars and sex workers get the same rhetoric that, oh, you could never choose to do that. And I think that's awful because like it completely invalidates people's personal choice. There are lots of reasons why, and people can obviously be coerced into these things or go into it because they feel like they have no other choice. But actually people do choose to go into it and they feel empowered to make that decision. And so I think it's really important that we don't tar all porn with the same label, but I think we have to be mindful of the porn that, you know, you have to be mindful of the porn you consume therefore because of it, and the vast swathes of free pornography that is out there and the way that that's influenced our approach to sex as a generation, I think is quite interesting. What we now think of as normal has been highly influenced by the free porn that's available. So we expect, you know, all labias and vulvas to all look the same. We expect all penises to look the same. We expect nobody to have any body hair beneath their nostrils, you know, when actually like humanity isn't like that. And that's when things like the wall of vaginas, which just shows these hundreds and hundreds of different vulvas, and we've got the same for penises and things, that go quite a long way to sort of re-educating people that everybody is different. So I think there is good porn out there. It's just not that easy to find. And unfortunately, it's art in its own right. So you pay to consume it, but people often don't want to pay for it. So
is there free porn out there that is
ethical?
Or what's the word?
There must be.
I
don't actually know one off the top of my head, I'm afraid.
Candid should get into that. That'd be cool.
Well, I think, do you know what? It's because when we were at the launch party, I can't remember their names, but there's some girls there that we met that run a
Come Curious.
Yeah, that's panel. Yeah. That's the one.
And they were talking about it. So maybe we'll shout out them and get some links that we can add.
I'm afraid I just don't know any off the top of my head, but it does exist out there. So go free and find it.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. What does it mean?
Yeah, I know.
Why am I landed on this question?
I wrote these questions.
This is out of order. Right. Basically, Leo quite often writes the questions and I do the editing, and he seems to always put in one just question that's just terrible.
Like,
and
can
I
we give him an example
with the vicar one?
A pastor.
Yeah, like we interviewed a pastor of a church, and the question I had to ask was, is Victor roleplay okay?
And he said yes, to be fair. Yeah.
He said yes, so, you know, we'll get straight back on that after the podcast. What does it mean when you masturbate to completely different things to what you want in real life, brackets asking for a friend?
Well, fantasy's fantasy, isn't it? So it doesn't have to be real. You know, that's the whole thing of having a fantasy. You can enjoy something that's different and that you might not want to access in real life. You know, we all know that sometimes the idea of something is better than the reality of something. And that's the whole point of being able to have that escapism. And that sort of brings you that ultimate pleasure that it's like, I can enjoy this just for me and it doesn't matter about anything else. And it stays in this fantasy land like an imaginary friend. And then you've got your reality that you actually want to engage and enjoy with. Nothing to be worried about with it.
Okay, because I thought maybe it might be like a comment on sort of sexuality. Like, for example, for me, I fantasize about men sometimes. Mm. And I'm like, and I know my sexuality is definitely, you know, I would think that I would romantically always go for a woman. Mm. However, when I think of, I have these like weird, like think about men and stuff like that. And in weird sort of situations, and then I'm like, but when I think of what I actually want, it's like a completely different kind of sex, and it's with, like, you know, a woman my age.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And I'm like, why, like, that's so conversely different. Mm. But it's not about sexuality, I guess, from what you're saying. It's more about just having, it's fantasy is different from what you want in real life.
Yeah. And also it's a complete spectrum, and also as we get older and we want to find a relationship that we want to be in, you know, or not be in, and create sort of a joint life together, it's really influenced by the society that's around you and your life experiences. So you're going to want to find a partner that mirrors that. So somebody that you fantasize about sexually may not match that romantic thing.
Oh, like on a societal level.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's, but it's so interesting.
More personal than that as well, because it's how society has influenced you as a person, you know. But yeah, it's that whole like romance and sexuality are different things as well. So you can be, it's why you can, people can be asexual but still want to be in a romantic relationship. It's that similar.
Right, thing. Got it.
Right.
Interesting. Right. Yeah, that's answered my question adequately. I didn't know that, but yeah.
Well, we're kind of at the end of our questions now. I think I have a bonus question asking for a friend, a non-specific podcast co-host friend. Are you single, Dr. L?
COVID's been an interesting time, like, because, yeah, you've just had to, like, lock down your entire dating life. So,
yeah,
I had just started dating somebody literally, like, at the end of February. And he's a paramedic in another city. So it's like, and we met doing some expedition training. So he's about to bugger off to Nepal in September. So I may never see him again.
Bloody
hell. So, you know, maybe ask me again in like 3 months.
Yes. Satches matches on the podcast strikes again. Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming on. We'll do more of these in the future. Yeah. I think if you're up for it, have you come back?
You got agony on.
Maybe we'll get Greg on as well with some prosecco. And yeah, so again, this episode is sponsored by Candid, and people can get money off sex toys by typing in S&L
an extra 10% off
checkout. So. Yeah, we'll add all the links.
We'll put your Dr. L
and...
Instagram handle in there as well.
Yeah, have you got anything you want to promote or shout out to our globally giant audience?
Yeah, just I think you guys have covered it all. We've got obviously our @Candid Instagram page, and then my @Dr. Alicia page is currently growing at the moment. Starting to drop some sort of education videos on there as well, like health benefits of masturbation, tips on buying your first vibrator. And also I want people to know that there's the Ask Dr. Alicia section on the Candid website. So if you ever have any questions, worries, concerns, you can drop me an email. It goes directly into there. Everything that comes through, obviously, patient-doctor confidentiality, it stays between the two of us. So yeah, any questions, just drop me a message. So good.
Leo's gonna message that, so
I'll be
much,
like, L.
Like, daily,
I woke up and my dick's
messages.
Gone. Oh wait, never have one.
Oh mate, okay, well this has been hilarious and informative and fun, and we will
Excellent.
Speak to you again.
Thanks,
soon.
Guys.
Thank you so much.
Much love.
See you later.
See you later. Bye.
Over and out.